Pickaxe.
Folks, welcome to Dungeons and Randomness. Since 2012, myself and an amazing cast of 18 have been telling stories in our homebrew world of Theria. Four different groups explore lost ruins, run for political office, rage against a mad king, set sail to long-forgotten islands, and so much more. Every group has a different story and flavor, and every season, or arc, has a new set of groups and stories, all building the history of our world with every single session. Literally hundreds of hours of stories are waiting for you as part of the Pickaxe Network. Check out Dungeons and Randomness wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll see you around the table.
And welcome back to The Review of Death, your fortnightly Doctor Who podcast where we talk about everything that's been happening in the world of Doctor Who and then review an episode of your choosing. And this week, we're doing an episode
of our choosing.
We're doing Evil of the Daleks,
yeah.
Which has just been released by BBC Studios, the animated reconstruction of one of the great Dalek stories of the 60s.
Absolutely. And we'll kind of, you know, work through that and let you know what we thought of the reconstruction as well as the episode itself.
Yeah.
But there's some news what has happened.
There is some news what has happened.
We tried to jump onto it as quickly as we could in the last episode. Yeah. But what you actually got was 10 minutes of us on Zoom talking about it. And that is, of course, that Russell T. Davis is returning to Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Which is sensational news. It's so bizarre.
Is there any other news that we need to any other
There are a few bits and bobs. I think we'll get that out of the way. Actually, what we should get out of the way first is we should thank the lovely patrons over at Patreon, yes, for your continued support.
Actually, I don't want to thank them because they made me watch bloody Zygon.
Oh yeah, right. So the other night we watched Zygon when being you just isn't enough. I didn't realize how pornographic it actually was until we sat down to watch it with about, you know, 15 other people.
Yeah.
It was the most bizarre viewing experience I've ever had, but we recorded our reactions to it, and so we're going to release that as
a little bonus
episode next, or this Friday actually. So this Friday you'll get an audio commentary of Zygon when being you just isn't enough with us.
Yeah,
so you know that'll be fun for some people, I'm sure. But yeah, so thank you to the patrons over at Patreon. Massive thank you to Jack Duffy,
yes,
for creating our brand new website or landing page, or you know, it's just the coolest.
It is so amazing. And I was blown away when you sent it to me.
I know. They did it totally off their own back.
Yeah.
And it was like, whoa, what a random surprise to get in my DMs.
Yeah.
And so reviewofdeath.co.uk.
I know. What's
it's
that about?
Nuts.
We've got a proper URL.
It's mental. So go and have a look at the website. And I think it's JackDuffy96, I think, is his at, or 97. Mm. It's out there. But, you know, massive thank you, Jack.
Yeah, incredible.
Nuts. So, you know, now you work for us, we're going to ask you to add loads of stuff to it, and we're going to overwork you until until you shut the website down. So
I've just realized that we always do these videos,
yeah,
and we never introduce each other.
We don't, do we?
Because I think we just assume that people know who we are because they've been listening for ages. But
five episodes in to finally do it. How would you introduce yourself, Matthew? What's the typical things that people say to introduce themselves in a Doctor Who podcast? Favorite episode, favorite Doctor? Least favorite Doctor,
so.
Least favorite episode. Go on.
Hello, I'm Matt, and my favorite Doctor is Tom Baker, and my favorite episode is Pyramids Mars.
Excellent. Least favorite Doctor and episode?
Least favorite Doctor? Oh, no.
We're not saying they're not good. Well, he might be.
I'm going to get a lot of hate if I say this. I'm going to have people burning my house down.
Okay, so we know who his least favourite Doctor is. That's okay, from what you've just said there.
Do you know who it is?
So Jodie Botts, he lives at his address.
She's fine, but she's just not for me.
Okay, his least favourite.
Sorry.
And least favourite episode?
Currently the Space Pirates, okay, from what we're going on. But there must be... No! I know which is the worst episode. The Doctor, the Widow and the Wardrobe.
Oh, that is poo.
Yeah. That is the first Doctor Who that I've watched. And I've literally watching it live. And I thought to myself, I need to switch this off. Because this is shit.
Bill Bailey's in that one, isn't he?
He is, unfortunately.
What a waste.
Wasted him.
I mean, we did say that about Matt Lucas in The Return of Dr. Mysterio.
Yeah.
Was that the first time he was in it?
No, he was in Husbands of River Song. And he was wasted in that.
He was wasted in that. And we said that's his indelible mark on the show. Thank God he got to come back because everyone loves Nardole now.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a joke with us over Nardole at the start, but we both grew to like him, I think,
right,
in the end. And I'm Billy, and my favourite episode, my favourite Doctor is, I have a crisis of conscience over it with John and Sylv. They're kind of always... Okay.
Interesting.
Taking over
second. You've got points then with my brother.
Yeah.
I keep saying, someone pointed this out on the comments in the YouTube video for the last one, where I'm like, oh yeah, Jonathan said this, or Johnny said that. They're like, who the
fuck is Johnny?
He's like, oh, that's my brother.
Well, we'll definitely give Johnny an introduction when he comes
yeah,
on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Dressed as Sylvester McCoy.
Dressed as Sylv, because there's no other reason to have him on than him dressed as Sylv. That's a joke, Johnny. Favourite episode, Curse of Peladon. Least favourite Doctor, Fifth Doctor. Least favourite story, it will probably be there, yeah, Doctor with the Wardrobe,
yeah,
or...
pretty crap.
Like, Zygon not even when like... being you isn't enough.
That doesn't count.
Well, it's licensed. It's fully licensed.
Nah, don't count.
No, okay.
Doesn't count. Mm-hmm. I don't care who paid for it.
Don't care who paid all that good money to look at lots of bums and knockers for God. No reason whatsoever. Yeah. And knobs.
And knobs,
full
yeah.
on knobs.
Yeah, that's the first thing you see, isn't it, really?
It's... You can't miss
it.
Winking at you, literally. So yeah, that's us. lots of knob gags. News in terms of things, what have happened? B&M.
Oh wow, yeah, there's some new proper Bristol there.
Do you remember when that first season 5 trailer came out, series 5 trailer, and everyone took the mick out of Matt Smith going, hey, bye bye gum?
Yeah, that was so weird.
That?
Yeah,
it's like that was when just... everybody was on the We Hate Matt Smith bandwagon, yeah. And you know, I remember a Gallifrey based comment that said his action figure will come with a rattle, a sonic rattle.
Yeah, it's so ridiculous. What's wrong with fandom? My God. And that was the big one as well. Victory of the Daleks. I am the Doctor, and you are the Daleks. Yeah, and people were like, oh my God, he's not
that
doing it like
so
that, is
cool
he?
So cool of them to leak
I
that.
Know.
Like,
yes. Oh.
I hate Doctor Who fans, honestly. So yeah, new B&M action figures.
New B&M figures have come out. They're not out yet. Mm. They are out mid to late October, possibly November, depending on how things go.
So we've got a first Doctor and TARDIS.
Which
we've
is lovely.
We've got the fifth Doctor...
With the two androids, which has caused some contention on the internet.
Yeah. Is everybody genuinely angry about having two more Dalek action figures?
Yeah.
Is that what everybody was upset over?
Well, they're upset about the Doctor Who fans. Yeah, they're upset about everything.
So if you don't know, there was a...
So they were annoyed about the android set because...
There's
no Cyberman.
Right.
And one of the androids is actually a woman in the story.
Yeah. So it's two separate... figures, because there are two androids.
There are two androids in the story, but in the story, one of them's a woman. But right. The toys, they're both blokes.
Okay, fine.
But my brother, who has obviously watched Earthshock a bazillion times, when I said to him, "Of course, one of them's a woman," he went, "Really?" So you know, so they got funny about that. They were upset as well that the Planet of the Daleks set is just two gunmetal grey Daleks,
rather than a gunmetal grey Dalek and the
Supreme Dalek, like the transparent one,
right.
Which is fair enough. But it has been confirmed, I think, safe to say, that they will be doing extra sets for certain stories.
Okay,
so like there'll be another Planet of the Daleks set potentially with the Supreme Dalek in. So don't worry about it just yet. If your favourite Dalek has not been released at B&M yet, don't panic, because it might come out at some point.
Public service announcement. We need to get out before people start hurting each other. Like
looting B&M, burning it down.
The other news, I suppose, would be that, well, we might have to redact this again.
Oh.
the whole the thing.
Yeah.
So in the space of 3 weeks, it's been leaked that is coming back as...
Yeah.
And... And is coming back as...
Well, those Matrix sound effects are coming in handy.
I mean, apologies. People pretty much worked out what it was last time, didn't they?
People in the YouTube comments were like, I'm trying to lip read what Billy's saying.
Oh, okay. Is back. Right, there we go. So that's exciting.
That's exciting. And I said to someone on... I can't... It's no good me discussing this, because it's all going to get bleeped
anyway.
Out. So
fine.
We'll talk about it when the time comes.
When the time comes.
Next year.
And we're still waiting for a trailer.
Yeah. By the time you hear this, this episode, the trailer may have come out.
Yes,
because
exactly.
People think... I don't know why. People seem to assume that it might happen on Saturday because of...
Well, I think... I mean, what we've had, obviously, are the interruption idents.
Which have been cool.
Which, I mean, but identical to the ones that Peter got for his first series, right?
Yeah.
In terms of placement.
Yeah.
Is it the actual conclusion to find the Doctor? Is like, because I, from what I, well, what it looks like.
It looks like it's a continuation of
and
that,
the
isn't
messages
it?
That have yeah. been sent and what we know about it is well, like, well, this looks like it's part of Find the
this
Doctor.
This is what I was going to say to you. I wonder if episode one of the series.
It's called Find the Doctor.
Find the Doctor, yeah.
Mm. I think that something went wrong with that campaign. Because it doesn't seem to have actually
it was a bit
concluded.
Of a, it was a damp squib.
It feels sort of, like Time Lord Victorious. It kind of feels like everything was going yeah. and then they, like, not that we maybe saw something happened.
No.
But the last piece of the puzzle just fell out of place a little yeah. bit and everything kind of crumbled as a result.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, those interruption idents look like they
it
could be
part like
of
it. It feels like it should be part of it, doesn't it?
Yeah. But we don't know that for sure. No. My phone is going off and I am checking every so often just to make sure that no trailer has dropped
oh my
while
God,
we're recording.
Could you imagine? That would have been good. We could have watched it
we
live.
We could have watched it live. That would have been good. But I yeah. So we're on a high alert at the moment.
Yeah.
Which is just as well because we're going to talk about it, this topic, the topics that we'll cover in this episode in a bit more of a relaxed way. Hmm. You'll see I have no notes on my table. You see I have no laptop. I've not been feeling very well the last couple of days. So now we just get to have an old-fashioned review of death natter with zero planning whatsoever, yeah. which is nice. So Russell T. Davies is coming back to Doctor Who, Matthew.
I know. This is insanely exciting.
Where were you when you heard the news?
I was sat at my desk in the mm-hmm. office mm-hmm. and I saw it come up and I was like, this can't be true. This must be a piss take. And then it was true. It was everywhere.
Yeah.
And everyone was losing their minds. And I was, you know, trying not to scream at my desk and jump up and down and do cartwheels. Mm-hmm. But I had to internalize it all.
Mm.
And I was like, I need to say something to somebody. Because nobody in my office likes Doctor Who.
No. And I always get that. I'm like, I feel like I need to phone someone.
Yeah.
So I usually phone my mum. And it's like, oh, okay. Because I've messaged you.
Yeah.
And we've had a chat and come to a conclusion of like, oh, this is exciting.
Yeah.
And then I'll phone my mum and go, oh, this has happened. And it's kind of not, it's not quite the same conversation.
Yeah, this is the thing. Like, I text my brother, so he was teaching. And then he texts me back and he's like, Matt, I'm really busy. And I was like, no, just call me when you can.
Yeah.
So he was like, okay, what's going on? I said, have you seen the news? And he was like, no, what's happened? I said, they've announced the new showrunner. Oh yeah, who is it? It's Russell T. Davies. And he was just like, what? What? Yeah. So we were there chatting for ages. But I should have been working. Sorry. Mm. Sorry, York's cast. yeah, and he was...
This isn't work.
Come
on. You play video games for a living.
That's what my brother says. He's like, oh, working. Look at me. I'm influencing the young minds of the next generation.
Of Doctor Who fans, maybe.
Doctor Who fans, yeah. So we were both... Well, I'm super excited. Jonathan was a bit more like, oh, yeah, but... You know, he wasn't brilliant. He had dopey shit in his stories. And I was like, but that's Doctor Who. It's par for the course. You're never going to get it.
No.
You're always going to get something that's going to make you go, ugh.
Yeah. But of course, that's par for the course. It's Doctor Who.
Exactly. But my God, what a safe pair of hands. You know,
well,
the godfather.
Yeah.
Of Doctor
so
Who.
I think a lot of people have been looking at that safe pair of hands things in two different contexts.
Yeah.
Of like, oh, okay, is this some sort of emergency? You know, we need to stop this going off a cliff sort of thing.
Yeah.
So we've got Russell in, which is a very, very mean-spirited way to look at it.
Yeah.
I mean, I certainly don't consider it to be any kind of like last-ditch attempt to stop the show from crashing. Because anybody could come in and, if they've got the right ideas in terms of promoting the show, I think that's half the battle. And I think that that's a battle that hasn't really been fought on behalf of whoever's in charge of that promotion.
Yeah.
It feels like every so often we do get a bit more of an injection of creativity into promoting the show.
Yep.
I mean, God, when Jodie's first series was coming out, there were posters. It was on the side of buses again.
Sorry.
He's getting a bit choked up thinking about it. He breathed in the truth. And now it's just like there's
it's nothing.
The Find the Doctor thing is just, it's kind of come and gone.
But yeah, the trouble is with the Find the Doctor thing is, unless you are a sad git on Twitter,
right, exactly.
you're not gonna know about that.
Exactly.
General public aren't gonna be looking up Jodie Whittaker.
And the I guess the point of the idents, the interruption idents, is that you can't quite tell what's going on.
Yeah.
You know?
Mavis, but the telly's going funny again.
Well, literally, who is this strange woman?
Yeah.
That's, you know, it's maybe not the best way of promoting the show.
No.
and everybody's obviously, if I do really get sick of Doctor Who fans never being happy.
Do you know what they should do?
Go on.
So at the end of the Find the Doctor thing online, they had that scary monster. They should do the scary monster because everyone on Twitter would be on Twitter like, did you see that weird fucking face on
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah, true.
You know, rather than, oh, it's Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There'd be more...
Something that's like, actually like...
Oh, was I going mad or was there like a horrible face in my TV?
Yeah, exactly.
And at least it would get people talking.
That would be cool.
Thank you, BBC. You can have that one.
Yeah, well, you can have that one. I'm getting really sick of seeing Doctor Who fans complaining about the lack of trailer, though.
Yeah, that is getting on my nerves.
Because we don't even know how far out we are from it.
No.
Everybody's assuming it's Halloween. And so people are going, well, if it's coming out on Halloween, why aren't they doing it now? I don't know that that's what's going to be happening.
Just surmising.
And you know, we obviously have just done a whole, we can do it better than you can or whatever thing.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
a joke. But there are some people out there that legitimately
really
are like,
yeah.
you know, why isn't the BBC doing this?
It's yeah, like, I know.
BBC, promote your show challenge or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, they do you not think there's, you know, hundreds of people who think about this sort of stuff every day?
Yeah.
You know, like, I know that we don't like to think that somebody working on Doctor Who actually has their ducks in a row and that it's all just chaotic all the time.
Yeah.
But it's not the case. It's a massive, you know, corporation. They'll have plans for what they're going to do.
Yeah.
And they clearly just started to get the wheels rolling.
Yeah.
Just because it didn't happen 3 weeks ago when everybody was complaining that there should have been a trailer then.
Yeah.
Or after the World Cup. Everybody's been saying this since the final.
That's true, isn't it?
Yeah. Of the Euros.
I've forgotten about that.
Everyone was saying it's going to happen during the Euros, during the halftime and during the final. Obviously it didn't.
No.
But everybody's been angry that it hasn't happened since then.
Yeah.
Rather than just waiting.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to come out, you know.
That's
like,
it, isn't it?
Yeah. Anyway. That's my little moan out of the way. So Russell coming back. One thing that we've both discussed with people is what it's going to look like when he does come back.
Yes.
And some people saying, oh, I hope it doesn't do X, Y, and Z, based on what he's done previously with the show, not to do with his writing.
No.
And I think you have to factor in his recent writing when you talk about Russell coming back, because you've said before, he's a very adaptable writer.
Very much so.
Very versatile in the voices that he uses.
It's not just his writing, it's just his whole understanding of the world of television. He has got his finger on the pulse.
Exactly.
He is incredibly clever. Mm. Incredibly clever. Mm. You know, and obviously a super talented writer.
Mm.
And it is just so exciting, like you said, to see how the other projects that he's done since Doctor Who, like It's a Sin, like Years and Years, you know, and then think, my God, that man is going to be doing Doctor Who.
Mm.
Forget all of the Russell T Davies of 2005 to 2009. Forget that.
Mm.
Look at what he's doing now and thinking, my God, what is his Doctor Who going to be like? I mean, obviously, I'm sure we'll still get a lot more of the human elements and the kitchen sink drama. And I think Doctor Who needs that for a wider audience. I think the wider audience enjoys that aspect of it, which is why it was so successful when it did come back.
I agree. I think you need that emollient almost in it to kind of, you have a family unit like the Tylers that are reacting to this and are going, it looks like a bloke in a suit.
Yeah.
But and then somebody gets horribly murdered by a Slitheen or whatever. You need that.
It needs to juxtapose it.
It's just a lens.
Yeah.
In much the same way that back in the day, a companion was there to ask the questions that the audience were.
Yeah.
I think that Russell gets what a general audience thinks of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And I think he is able to, Stephen Moffat was very, I don't know what the right word to use is. It was almost like he was the anti-fan making Doctor Who in the way that he would refer to the program within the show.
Yeah.
You know, constantly doing the Doctor Who thing.
Very metatextual,
exactly.
Wasn't it? Yeah.
Whereas Russell is meta, but in a much more welcoming sense.
Yeah.
Where you do get a sense that these characters, you know, they are real. They're reacting to this bloke in a suit.
Yeah.
In much the same way that anybody normally would. Tim Shaw, that scene where the guy chucks his kebab at
him,
put me in mind of Russell quite a lot. That sequence, because it's like, it's this science fiction fantasy series, this silly TV show is coming
into the real world,
world, and people are reacting to it like that.
And I think, you know, Chibnall tried in his own way to distill a bit of that, because obviously all of his drama is stuff like Broadchurch, which is obviously very family-based, social-based. But I think the issue at least that I had, and I think why it didn't necessarily work is just there was too many people. With Russell's Doctor Who, you had one companion, which was the focal point, and the family around it. With Chibnall's Doctor Who, you've got Yaz and her family. You've got Ryan and everything going on with him and Bradley and all that sort of stuff. And it's like, you can't take a grip on everything. There's nothing there to grasp.
I think you're right. It's because those characters are maybe painted in slightly broader strokes Russell's characters are. And I don't think there's anything that, like, one is a bad version of the other. It's just a different way of approaching it. Because maybe Chris is more focused on the storytelling of these, or like individual scenes with these family dynamics, rather than knowing, which is what was the genius of Russell's stuff, or part of it anyway, was I know what Jackie's going to think of this.
Yeah.
You know what people's reactions to certain situations are going to be. I think the other thing that I'm really looking forward to having back in Doctor Who is that element of Russell's writing and his creativity, where I've said it before on old videos, you can draw Russell's Who the next day in school. You know, you can't draw a what are they called, Tesseract or whatever they were called. What were they called in isn't that in the Avengers? What was the name of that thing from Let's Kill Hitler, the antibodies or whatever, you know,
those
monsters where it's like, I've forgotten about this. It's not a monster.
I mean,
I'd
forgotten that was a
thing.
Do you
know what I mean?
I thought you meant the actual like robot.
Well, yeah,
thing,
yeah. But, well, but the whole deal. It's just like Russell, when he created something.
Yeah.
It was colourful and it was characteristic.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could say maybe it was a perfect storm back then and he had everybody there to connect the dots to make it successful.
Yeah.
And maybe those people won't be there. I mean, we haven't even spoken about the fact it's Bad Wolf.
I know. I mean, this is the other thing. Like, before you even...
So that's BBC Wales...
out of it.
Out of the picture.
Yeah. This so it would be BBC Studios in conjunction with Bad Wolf TV.
Now, obviously...
Is it Bad Wolf TV or is it
Bad Wolf
Productions? It's Bad Wolf TV from Doctor Who.
So this interests me, that this is the first time... I know BBC Studios are obviously involved.
Yeah.
And obviously BBC Wales were... It's not like they're completely independent as a production company. But this is the first time Doctor Who has been produced outside of the BBC's bubble.
Since 1996. Bonkers.
It's nuts.
It's really... And I think this is one of the more exciting things that people don't seem to talk about very much.
Exactly.
Is that someone else is making it, and what is that going to be like? And what are the benefits of that going to be?
I can tell you one of the benefits. It's not going to be produced with a BBC mindset.
Yeah.
Whether that's a negative or a positive, you know, for people to take away. This is being made by a production company that wants to make the best drama in the world.
Yes.
They're not fussed, like, it's... If Call the Midwife was made by Bad Wolf, it would be a very different television programme. You know, it would be set up for the HBOs.
Yeah.
You wouldn't blink scrolling through different programmes to watch. Doctor Who, I think, is always... Maybe less so in... Because if there's one thing to take away from the Chibnall era, it's that Doctor Who has never looked better. And it set the show up really well for what it can look like in the future.
Yeah.
But when you look at His Dark Materials, produced by Bad Wolf, I mean...
It's another level, isn't it? It's a disparity.
Yeah. You know, like, I look at some of the Moffat stuff and think, man, this looks really quite ugly. And a lot of the Russell stuff, but that's a symptom of the time it was made
exactly,
in.
Exactly, yeah.
With the Chibnall era stuff, it looks lush.
Yeah.
And it's got a lovely palette and everything's really consistent. But it's not His Dark Materials.
No.
In terms of production quality and like the amount of money that's going into it. Man, can you imagine what Doctor Who's going to look like now?
Is it
going to be a limited series like that? There's so many questions that we don't know answers to.
We don't know, do we?
No.
We just don't know. Because, I mean, I know when we were all at the pub the other night, we were talking about, what other writers is he going to bring in? And then I sort of thought to myself, well... Maybe it'll be like a Children of Earth deal. Maybe he won't have other writers. Maybe he'll just think, oh, okay, we'll just do short miniseries and I'll write them. Or, you know, we just don't know. But I think it's very exciting to think that it's not just Russell coming back. It's Julie Gardner coming back.
Right.
It's Jane Tranter's coming back. You know, all of these people that made the foundations for Doctor Who to this day
are coming back.
It's bonkers. It's like, what? It's happening. But it's so exciting.
I would love to know how they feel inheriting the show back now.
Yeah.
because they obviously set it up, set it running.
Yeah.
Massive success. Gave the, you know, handed the keys over to somebody else.
Yeah.
And were able to sit back and work on their own things.
Yeah.
Now it's coming back round to them and they're getting it back and going, right, how much of what we set up is still working?
Yeah.
Structurally.
Yeah.
In terms of chain of command or how we get the scripts to the screen.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you've still got your diehards on the show like Danny Hargreaves.
Yeah, of course.
You know, he's almost as much of a staple of those early years as seeing Phil Collinson pop up for a chat on Doctor Who Confidential. Yeah. There are still so many people involved in that show. Is it going to give them an injection of, let's do this 125% again?
Yeah.
I'm not saying they don't do that, but I think having somebody like Russell behind it is going to attract a lot of attention.
Yeah.
And everybody's going to have to be on their A game because he is probably the biggest and best export in terms of television that we've had in the last 30 years.
Yeah.
And he's coming back to the show that he made a massive success, that made his name.
Yeah.
You know, people are going to be queuing up appearing in this now. And that is really exciting. People who maybe Matt Smith going, well, you know, I'll give it another 10 years and see if I fancy coming back and doing a one-off.
Yeah.
Now that Russell's back involved.
Yeah, that might
everybody
change.
Who is a little bit like cold about doing it again or being involved in the program again.
Yeah.
Is going to have a change of heart, I think. And that's cool.
Does that now mean that technically, depending on how long he lasts, Russell might end up being the man who has written more Doctor Who? Obviously, it's Stephen Moffat at the moment.
You know. I guess so.
Oh, dear. I can't wait to see that on Instagram. Those two bickering about that.
I think that this is a big moment for the show, for its longevity as well. Because if the way that the show is perceived currently by the general public, if that doesn't pick up with Russell behind it, what more can you do besides resting the program?
Yeah, I think this is it.
And I'm not saying this is a last ditch attempt to salvage whatever was ruined or whatever by the Chibnall era, which I don't think is the case at all. But this is, you couldn't get a better
setup, isn't it,
going forward.
When we did our first episode of this podcast where we were talking about, you know, who could come in and do it.
Yeah.
And I think people did say, oh, bring Russell T Davies back.
I think
we all we all did that. We all rolled our eyes and like, no, Doctor Who needs to move forward. It needs to move forward. But I think then when you were then presented with, you know, he is doing
I know.
Suddenly it was just like, brilliant. You know, that's fantastic. And I know, like I said at the start, it was a safe pair of hands, but it's not in a derogatory way. Mm. It's a safe pair of hands because, you know, he's so brilliant. And I know that whatever he does, it will be right for what the program needs. At least I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so. But I said to you last week, and this was after we were recording, but I said to you last week, I said, we've obviously got all of Series 13, all these specials still to come.
Yeah.
But hearing that news reinvigorated my interest in Doctor Who like that, instantly.
But so this is the interesting, the other side of the argument the way the fandom have talked about it is everybody going, guys, come on, Jodie's still got a full series to go. Can we not talk about Russell so much? It's like, what? I mean, sorry, I love this current era of the programme. I really like it.
Yeah, you do.
You know, I'm allowed to be excited about what's going to come next. I'm still looking forward to Series 13.
Yeah.
And I still am sure we're going to get some great stories to enjoy.
Yeah.
At least you hope so anyway.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm excited for what's going to happen, but that's like going, oh yeah, there's a new Doctor, but can everybody just focus on the fact that this Doctor's still got however many episodes left to go? It's like, yeah, but that's kind of taking the fun out of the show moving forward.
Of
like
course.
You know, okay, we'll look back on this era, Jodie Whittaker's era, and we'll know from which point on we heard that Russell was coming back, and you know, we'll be able to trace popular opinion of the program from there. But do you think that could give Doctor Who a ratings bump?
Oh, yeah.
For the start of this series, Series 13.
Yeah.
So let's talk more about Russell coming back.
I said this to my brother. I said, you know, because people, like you said, people were saying it was a distraction. But no, I don't think it is, because people are going to be like, huh, but if Russell's coming back, I might just dip in and see, you know, just to get ready for when he does come back, sort of thing. And I think it's bonkers that it was an absolute sensation when the story dropped. He was trending on Twitter.
I know.
I think I saw that going around on Twitter more than when Chibnall and Jodie announced that they were going.
Yeah. Well, of course, because it's positive news for a start.
Well, that's true.
That's always going to spread.
Yeah.
yeah. spread more.
And it was always the same thing. Everyone was like, did I dream this?
Yeah, I know. I know.
And I still, and I think I text you late at night. I was like, I've just seen the picture of Russell again.
I know.
And it just hasn't sunk in that he's coming back.
The thing that got me, and again, we talked about this in the pub the other night, was when he tweeted day one.
Yeah.
Or put it on Instagram. And it was like, man, he's working on the show again. Yeah. This is insane.
He's sitting down and he is typing the words TARDIS, INT.
Yeah.
Dot.
Yeah. It's insane. So, and this is a whole other thing. Like, right, so we've still got a whole new TARDIS to look forward to.
I know.
Do you know what? This is the thing. It's the exciting part of being a Doctor Who fan. And because it's a completely new production team.
Everything is going to be different.
Everything's going to be different. Like, you know, would the BBC be like, okay, cool, here are all our Daleks, our Dalek props?
Yeah.
Or would they go, I mean, if you want to make your own, that would be nice as well. Like, would they just fabricate a whole new,
well, they might,
you know,
do,
Dalek design?
You know,
I don't think the TARDIS is going to follow that same rough, you know, it's always had the same basic look, really, since Eccleston.
Yeah.
That's going to change completely, I'm sure.
This is the thing. I think I was saying this to my brother the other day about the TARDIS. Mm. Like, you know, I think the organic thing was very 2005 sci-fi. Mm. And I think now it must be something different. I hope it... I mean, obviously, I didn't like the organic thing anyhow.
Sure.
But I hope that that changes. I mean, I don't know what it is. Mm. I don't know what the look would be.
Mm.
But I hope it is something different, and I hope it's something that when we see it, we go, ooh.
It's also, you know, the market that Russell was making telly for back in 2005, obviously streaming services weren't a thing.
Yeah.
Even the idea of pausing and rewinding a show that you taped on Sky Plus or whatever.
Yeah.
That was a very new and cool thing to do.
Yeah.
So all the conversations that Russell's had or things he said in interviews just prior to getting the job.
Yes.
Where he's saying, okay, we need to be more like, Doctor Who should be more like Disney Plus and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, he said, you know, he was talking about how Doctor Who can stand up there amongst Star Wars, amongst Marvel and DC and all that lot. And he said, if we can just push it.
Mm.
And it's like, oh, suddenly that we has a whole different meaning than just the royal we.
Yeah.
Is that the way?
Yeah.
It's me and bloody Julie. It's real people
currently thinking about it.
Yeah.
Like, they are now thinking, how does Doctor Who look? What does it look like compared to Mandalorian? Like, I've started to get into The Mandalorian. And I think we're 3 episodes into the second series or something.
Yeah.
And I was watching it and I was thinking, if I surgically remove Mando from this scene and put, you know, Tina Miller in this scene or whatever, like, the opportunities to raise the profile of the show from a visual perspective too.
Yeah.
You can't, if you want to compete with The Mandalorian, you want to invest in one of those
big, massive, wonderful
indoor sets or whatever, you know,
the
like
projections,
the
things.
Yeah, all the projection stuff, because it, like, Doctor Who can and should look like that.
Yeah.
And you get closer. It always feels like Doctor Who's like maybe a year or two
behind it all. Yeah.
And now it's like, well, with people who want their finger on the pulse of, you know, TV as a whole or media or film, and people who are aware of the zeitgeist and are pushing forward trends, or maybe even Doctor Who will invent a couple of trends or whatever, you know, it's just, it's bizarre, even from like a marketing perspective. A Bad Wolf going to be responsible for it? Or, you know, is the Doctor Who Twitter account still going to say tweets by BBC Studios?
Yeah.
You know, when will the logo change on the collection sets?
Oh my God, they won't do that. They won't do that. They won't change the logo. I think, well, they might change the logo for the program, but they won't change it on those collector's sets.
So do you think that will be the new heritage logo?
Possibly.
For like all merchandise is going to be Jodie's logo or classic stuff?
Maybe, or maybe it'll just be limited to the collection sets.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, people just look at the nice pictures anyway that the binding does. No one really pays attention to anything else.
For someone who knows Russell, a few of the people that we know that know Russell, can you snip this little section here and just say, just make sure that the collection sets have the same logo?
But he's a clever man. He'll know. He's a fan. He'll be like, oh no, don't change
it. Don't change it.
Everybody
will be really upset.
But it's interesting because I think before, I don't think we mentioned it on the podcast the first episode, but you and I talking privately, I think we were talking about the whole, the technology of Lucasfilm and all that sort of stuff. And we sort of said, God, you know, it is going to end up, Doctor Who is going to have to be bought out by someone like Disney or Netflix or whatever.
Oh yeah, we've said that before.
And now it's not happened, but it's got its foot in that direction, having someone else coming in to make it.
Yeah. The thing that really excited me was when comparing it to His Dark Materials.
Yeah.
Is I've remember...
Seen that. I feel like I should...
It's probably a good idea to be honest, because you'd probably get a vibe from it, wouldn't you? But it, like, there was a section where they were showing how they did the CGI for a monkey in it. And Doctor Who, apart from when Doctor Who Confidential was doing its thing, it never had sort of things where it would get out into the public, this scene has the most hairs on a CGI character ever, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, His Dark Materials did stuff like that. So even from that perspective, Doctor Who is in a better position to be respected in the industry. It could start winning BAFTAs again. His Dark Materials won quite a few awards,
did
I'm
it,
sure.
Yeah.
Like it's never been set up better to succeed.
No.
So over the next couple of years, what are we going to get? So next year, we're getting the three specials.
Yes.
So for the rest of 2021, we've got 8 episodes of Series 13.
No, 6 episodes.
6 episodes in Series 13.
And then 3 next year for 2022. 3 next year.
Then the 60th anniversary in 2023.
Yeah.
So when you read the news, what did that look like to you? So from 2023 onwards, what did it come across to you as?
Well, yeah, I mean, it wasn't very clear, was it? It just had the 60th anniversary, which could mean anything. It could mean just an anniversary special. It could, you know, they're obviously playing their cards close to their chest, which is fine. You know, it's the anniversary year. If it is just a special, fine. Maybe Doctor Who needs that little respite in between Jodie finishing and it coming back. Because it'll probably literally be a year.
I agree with you.
Because it'll be, centenary for BBC is probably November-ish next year. Mm. And then obviously the 60th anniversary will air on the 23rd of November, more than likely. So it'll be a year. And I think it needs that period.
I think you're right.
Just to clear away the cobwebs and then the build-up to this is what Doctor Who looks like.
Yeah.
Nice new TARDIS police box.
So from a production standpoint as well, so we'd expect the 60th anniversary to start shooting once Jodie's stuff has wrapped on telly, like after the centenary special.
Yeah, this is it.
And then you get the 60th anniversary special shown in November.
Yeah.
By which point have they started shooting Series 14?
Yeah.
You know, because what I took that to mean from the press statement was a 60th anniversary special and then seasons. The years afterwards. Which would be great.
And this is the other thing. Do they carry on and say, this is Doctor Who Series 14?
Yeah.
Do you think they should?
I think so.
I don't know if they should.
Really? Do you think they're going to reboot it?
I think they might reboot it.
So, because we have Doctor Number One again.
No, I don't think they'll reboot it.
Okay.
I just think they will just reset the numbering.
Really?
In terms of seasons.
Right.
So it'll still be the...
So we're going to have
the 14th
Doctor.
Series finale
thing all over again. Do you remember that? Series 5?
Yeah. I think they'll probably do that. Because I think, you know, 14 series, it feels like... It doesn't feel like it's accessible. Do you know what I mean? Like, even now, there's rumours with The Mandalorian that Series 3 of The Mandalorian will be the last series, and that Series 4 will be... a slight refresh, retitle, same characters,
right?
But it just needs a bit of a rebrand just to get people back into it again and just to get people talking again. And I think that's probably fair, because I think the way that the world works in terms of, you know, consuming is your favorite word.
Thank you.
Consuming media.
down the evergreen content pipeline.
Exactly. we just don't have attention spans anymore. So if something comes out and it seems fresh and new, it's the same with Marvel. Look at Marvel. It's all phase one, phase two, phase three.
But it works in that context, because I think people are more understanding now of multiverses and alternate. So that's fine. So if you want to do that, that's cool. My only thing is, from a standpoint of what it looks like on a shelf, if it goes back to series one, it's like, okay.
Oh, yeah, that's true. But also, I wasn't thinking about that.
I mean, that was half jokingly that I was concerned about that.
Oh, no.
However... I think if you're Chris Chibnall, and you, or even Stephen Moffat, and you've done all this stuff, this world building, and you think whether or not it's the perception or the opinion of the public or Doctor Who fans, you have set Doctor Who up. You've left it in a better place than when you found it. And then the next showrunner comes along, great, pass the baton over to him or her or whatever. And you go, right, so now we're going to make series one of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, isn't it better just to muck in and just, it's all one, because then it gets too, it will get
very confusing.
Do you know, I just think like, don't pretend that what's come, don't be ashamed of it and say like, right, we're going to reset and do series one, which is what came across to me with Stephen Moffat's run of it.
Yeah.
Is you go, well, not the run, but when it was when rumored it came, internally.
Yeah.
That series five was being referred to as series one.
Yeah.
And then it was, that was a bit bizarre. Mm. Like, okay, well, internally, I'm sure maybe it's a production code thing.
Yeah.
And then it came out that it was going to be called series one.
Yeah.
So then everybody thought, okay, it's a reboot. Like, whatever happened in End of Time Part 2 is going to be irrelevant.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, that wasn't the case.
No.
Why wouldn't you just call it series five?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know.
I just think it comes across a bit wanky to say, like, it's maybe series
it'll be
one
like
again.
Maybe it'd be like Big Finish box sets. Maybe it'd be like Doctor Who, Dark Eyes, and it'll be like a mini series.
I can see that. But then it's like, we'll reset the entire program then, you know?
Woo, dear, don't do that.
Yeah, but then it gets confusing for the audience.
Yeah, true.
If you call it, unless it's got a subtitle.
Yeah, I think maybe they do that.
Okay, fine.
Doctor Who subtitle.
And then you call that series one.
The reboot.
Oh, God. Anyway, we're very excited for Russell to come back.
Yeah.
And is there anything else you can think of to say about it?
Not really. I mean, just really exciting, isn't it?
It is really
Everything's
exciting.
Everything's going to change. Oh, music. People are saying Murray Gold coming back.
I hope not, too.
Mm. Not that I don't like Murray Gold, but I think he was on it for so long. And obviously people are saying, oh, well, you know, Murray Gold did the music for years and years and he did It's a Sin. I don't know if he did the English Scandal.
Very English Scandal.
But I would, it would feel like it's not a step backwards, but it would just be like,
a bit too much relying on
the
old hand.
Yeah, it would be just too similar. He's got his style.
Yeah.
You can watch years and years, and watching it, I was like, this sounds like Murray Gold. Yeah, and then the credits rolled, and I was like, it is Murray Gold.
I know what you mean. Fine if he has his own in-house person that, you know, maybe Murray, out of all the composers that Russell's worked with, is the person that gets the musical soul of what he's doing.
Yeah.
And what Russell hears is what Murray provides.
Yeah.
In which case, that's a good pairing and you shouldn't split that up because it obviously works. We're obviously going off of don't use Murray based off of his last however many years doing it, where you start to get the impression he's running out of themes or running out of ways to express certain things. But then you'd have something that was so totally out of left field, like there's a track from The God Complex,
which
is puts me in the mind of sort of McCoy, Kev McCulloch sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, he's got a couple more ideas up his sleeve, actually.
Yeah.
So while I wouldn't be adverse to having him come back, I prefer Sega Nakanola's sound for Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And I would much prefer that to be the type of sound that we get for the show.
And again, this comes back to fandom being shitty. I was really disappointed to see that there were people online saying, oh, well, Sega Nakanola, he had his chance and he failed. And I was like, what are you talking about? He's done some really good music. Like,
who's saying that?
I don't know. I just saw people. I saw people saying it, and like, and then I saw other people like trying to justify, like, no, look at all this. Like, his good Cyberman theme. I think his theme for the Master is excellent. I like Jodie's theme.
Yeah, his Dalek.
His Dalek theme is good.
The Dalek theme from Resolution, and then the one that he reworks for Revolution when the you first see the Dalek police drone or whatever. That's probably one of the coolest pieces of music.
I mean, I think it just goes to show how much of an indelible mark these composers have on the program. Because yesterday, my Jodie Whittaker Big Chief figure was delivered, and I was taken out of the box and I was humming her theme.
Just subconsciously
doing it. And I was like, huh, I forgot that that was the theme because I haven't watched Doctor Who for such a long time, or that version of Doctor Who.
Do you remember Peter's Am I a Good Man theme? I thought I'd throw you off then. I had a feeling you'd go, don't have a clue. Don't remember it at all.
No, I liked his theme.
Well, there we go. That's Russell coming back. We're going to have a lot to talk about going forward.
Oh, I can't wait.
Oh my God.
What's the theme music going to be like? It's probably going to go something like diddly dum, diddly dum, diddly dum.
Something like that.
Yeah,
along those lines. Yeah.
And if it is Murray Gold, follow in Sagan's bloody footsteps and actually keep the diddly dums properly.
The Delia baseline.
Yeah, don't go dumdy dum. It's diddly dum. Call yourself a bloody musician.
I think that's where we have a break there. That's the best place to leave it. Hello, everybody over at Patreon, or, you know, just our viewers in general that are watching this. We're going to read out some names of the people that have been kind enough to support us on the Review of Death Patreon account.
A massive thank you to Macro99, Daniel Davies, Robert Johnston, Rowan Thorne, Joe Dre McCarron, David Cunningham, Joe Bardsley, Luke Smith, Andrew Mark Thompson, Jack D. Evans, Ryan Kemp, Liam Duke, Josh Lambert, Joe Kay, Exile to the Timelash, Rowan Heathcote, Jude Lavis, Maxon Russell, James Woods, Tom Lindsay, William Carlyle, Callum Devine, Hugh Burke, Sunny Mullings, Thomas Langford, Jeff McCrory, Chris Clark, Will Price.
Well done.
Thank
Excellent.
You.
Thomas Gentile, Matthew Bevan, Conrad Harbert, Starter Pack, Donovan Ladusky, Gregor Shepherd, Jack Addison, Taylor Woodison, Christian Craig, Yanto Danielson, Future Contact, Jean-Luc Harry, Bobby Cook, Jack G, Chad Welsh, Thomas McDonald, Mark Sanderson, Harvey Smith, Jake Booth, Jay Gent, Harry Houlihan, Miles Lanham, James Garrett, Jack Duffy, Harry Palmer, and Peter Adamson.
Thank you
for supporting the Review of Death, and thank you for not choosing too complex a name in your living. It's appreciated.
Evil of the Daleks.
Evil of the Daleks.
Gosh.
It's a good story, isn't it?
It's bloody good.
Thanks for tuning in to the Review of Death.
Yeah,
we're
bye.
Gillian and Matt. So the new animation is out.
Yes.
You have seen it now.
I've watched it, yeah. Me and Johnny sat down and watched it together, which was really exciting because I had this realisation watching it. I was like, I've watched every classic episode of Doctor Who with my brother, I think, probably. Mm. And that is still carrying on today.
Yeah.
That I'm getting to watch new old Doctor Who with my brother. It's like, that's brilliant.
I mean,
there's a few that we've watched bits of the Faceless Ones together or the Macro Terror. But yeah, it's like, wow, that's nice.
It's a rediscovery thing, isn't it? Every single time one of these comes out and it gets a new appraisal.
Yes.
Even the same with the collection sets, even if it's a story we've seen a million times, like Genesis or whatever. Every episode gets its time in the sun again, which is really nice.
And it's good for me because, like you, I mean, I've explored the missing episodes in terms of audio tracks and loose canon recons and all that sort of stuff. My brother hasn't.
Yeah.
So for him, he only knew that the Emperor Dalek was in it.
Right.
And that was sort of it in episode two, and he couldn't even remember that.
Mm.
So it's really nice to be sat there with him and him like getting invested and being like, gosh. And I'd be like, did you know that happened? And
he's
like, oh, no, I didn't. And he's like, yeah, see, it's good.
Seeing it in a visual form, seeing it translated in a visual form, is really satisfying because obviously it's not going to paint the same picture that you would even with telesnaps, but sometimes things just do kind of work, you know, in the visuals of it all. I think that because this is a BBC Studios animation compared to obviously the Big Finish creative stuff, like the soon to come out Galaxy 4 and Fury from the Deep. Which of the animation styles do you prefer? Because I kind of feel like the BBC Studios ones, they've probably had longer to actually nail it down, but I sort of feel like this is the look for the animation.
Yeah,
you know?
I must speak as I do prefer the look of these ones, the Evil of the Dalek. I think Evil of the Daleks was probably the best animation that they've done.
Yeah.
Hands down.
Mm.
I love the style of it. I don't think that the look of Patrick Troughton was so good. I wasn't so keen on his likeness for some reason. I don't know what it was. It felt like they changed it. And I thought in Faceless Ones and Macro Terror, I thought, oh, he looks fine.
I kind of feel like he's, every other one he looks all right in.
Yeah.
But like, you know, I think that, you know, Invasion nailed the hangdog look pretty perfectly, didn't it?
Yeah.
And the other ones have made him maybe look slightly too young. I think that's the thing that slightly throws me off.
Yes, I think you're right.
His voice is obviously
older,
but visually they haven't quite got the aging right.
Yeah.
He obviously looks like an older man.
Yeah.
But maybe it's the hair, I don't know what it is.
Something about it, but maybe you're right. Maybe it is the oldness that isn't quite there because he's got such a great face.
Mm.
He's such a good, you know, he's good. Really, he should be sort of
But that's something
easy
that
capture.
The animations will never capture.
Yeah.
I mean, even when it comes to like Lesterson in Power of the Daleks, you're not going to get that performance in the same way that you would otherwise.
And I think this is the thing, like obviously you and I, we do not know Lesterson's, how he acted.
Exactly.
But we've seen enough Patrick Troughton for us to go, oh, yeah, maybe he'd have done that. Or, you know what I mean?
So, Evil of the Daleks, When was the first time you watched it or experienced it?
It would have been about 2014.
Mm-hmm. That was the first time.
And I loved it.
Yeah.
I still preferred Power of the Daleks, mm-hmm. and I think I still do.
Right.
As good as Evil of the Daleks is, I think I prefer Power just because it's a slightly tighter story.
Okay.
But it's bloody good.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it more this time watching it as an animation than I did as a recon, yeah.
So the first time I experienced it was Tom Baker's narrated version on cassette.
Wow, okay.
That was the first time, and that was the that was the only Doctor Who cassette I think we owned. But I've got very, very strong memories of that first two episodes.
Right.
Because I feel like I was maybe too young to be listening to a seven-parter or whatever. I will say this about Evil of the Daleks from the off. My one real complaint with it is I think it is an episode or two too long.
Definitely.
I think the faffing around in the mansion goes on for far too long. Yeah. And that whole sub-episode where it's Jamie and Camel wandering around the house picking off Daleks isn't actually... Even when it's animated, isn't that enjoyable to kind of watch?
No, that could be easily truncated into the previous episode. Mm. There is a whole subplot that both me and my brother were just like, what is the deal with this?
Mm.
Which is the bit, which is introduced in episode two.
Mm.
You have the other guy, Mr. Tyrrell, is that his name?
So is this the guy in the stables?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and they kidnap Jamie.
Yeah,
and it's for what purpose? And he's like a Dalek operative. And I was like, well, why
is this
do they
the posh guy?
The posh dude.
Because his wife's there.
Yeah, his wife is, or his girlfriend is Maxtable's daughter.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, hang on a minute. If you're a Dalek agent, and the Daleks have already got Maxtable working for them, why are you here? And why are you kidnapping Jamie?
It does feel like it has a few too many characters.
Yeah, it was just like, oh, we've kidnapped him. We've taken him to the barn of this house.
Yeah.
And then 2 seconds later, they all walk in and they're like...
Go. Oh, he's walked out.
Yeah, what are you doing with Jamie in the barn? And it was like, this feels really strange.
And also there's the bloke who's in league with him.
Yeah.
The slightly rougher bloke.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the guy from Ain't Half Hot Mum. The Welsh guy.
Oh, is it really?
Guy. Yeah, yeah,
interesting.
Yeah.
So, but like that is like a too many cooks sort of thing.
Yeah, it is.
Slightly too many people involved in something that isn't related to the Daleks.
Yeah.
And I think in a Dalek episode when all you want to see is Daleks, when they do pop up, I think towards the end it does get slightly comical. I don't, because it did elicit laughs actually in the screening at the BFI, that whenever there's an argument happening in the laboratory, a Dalek always comes in to break it up.
Right.
And, you know, there's only one Dalek that ever kind of directs the plot.
Yes.
And it's just whenever something needs to happen, that Dalek will come out of that cupboard and shout at somebody and go, do this now. Okay, that's our next episode sorted.
Yeah. Advance the plot.
It's well padded, I will say. It's not like the Space Pirates when it's just like interminable what you're actually watching to stretch the plot out. It's like, oh. So thankfully, because Jamie has a lot more agency in the story than I remembered.
Mm.
And all those scenes where, for the first time, he's actually butting heads with the Doctor and saying, I don't think you've got your head on straight this time.
It's excellent.
Like, really good.
Yeah, my brother was just like, my God, I've never, you know, you never see that side of
Jamie.
The Jamie and the Doctor's
and
relationship.
It's probably Fraser's best performance.
It's really good.
And it's probably because it's just the two of them.
Yeah.
Like, you're setting Victoria up as the damsel in distress, but she's got her own thing going on with that Dalek. So you don't need to worry too much about developing her character because she's just the damsel in distress.
Yes.
And to be fair, the Victoria we see in this story isn't any different to the Victoria that leaves in Fury from the Deep.
No, not really.
She doesn't really change at all.
No.
And I think that she's always going to be the subjugated character when, through the entire story, she's a prisoner through the entire thing.
Yeah.
And it's only at the end when you have the final end. And you don't see... Well, you have that kind of, there's the TARDIS, they're all going to go off together.
Yeah.
We're going to look after you sort of thing. But she doesn't have anything in her character beyond she gets captured a lot and shouted at and gets quite upset. Because her moaning and her crying and her blubbering does get a little bit too much in the story. She's like constantly being yelled at by that Dalek. You have lost weight! You have fallen by 17 ounces! Like, why does this Dalek care?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's a prisoner and it's trying to keep
her alive. Yeah. You will not feed the flying pests outside.
The Daleks are the funniest in this story.
They're so good. The voices are amazing.
Yeah, I know.
Peter Hawkins, and then when Roy Skelton comes in, classic.
Proper.
They sound so good.
And it's a much funnier story than I actually remember it being. There are some really funny bits. Like, we were joking down the pub the other day, the way the Dalek just kind of bodies.
Oh, yeah, the bloody bitch slap Dalek.
Yeah.
We watched it and we were like, did that really happen? It's amazing. And you're like, why have they never done this before? I guess if you're doing it with a prop, it's very clunky. But to animate it, I'm not going to say it must be easier. Sorry, Rob. You're probably listening to this, you'll probably think, no, it bloody isn't.
The Daleks have never looked better.
The Daleks were stunning.
I know.
Rob did an amazing job. Rob Ritchie, you bloody hell.
I know, it's insane.
You deserve an award because they looked fantastic. And the detail.
I know.
Superb. Just the tiny little things. It was incredible.
The iris gives it so much more character. Yeah. I think Rob should be credited for reintroducing the iris as a way for a Dalek to actually display an emotion.
Yeah, because that needs to be implemented on the real props.
100%. And also the slight pitch and wobble.
Yeah.
And it's not just when a Dalek, like I always loved in Power when they come out of the ship and there's a slight kind of jiggle.
Clunk, and the eye flops. Yeah. And he did it again in this.
Exactly. There's a bit when the Dalek's yelling at Victoria and it's...
It wiggles about.
It's going like that on its casters.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's such a lovely, just a little bit of emotion involved in a little motion like that.
It almost makes you think, maybe they should be sticking Nick Briggs inside the Dalek doing these voices because he would be animating the Dalek in a way that it needs to be animated.
This Dalek is really agitated. Really wants to kill somebody or this Dalek's a bit more blasé or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Not to put Barnaby Edwards and everybody else out of a job, but I just think, you know, to really gel those performances.
Absolutely.
It would be great.
It would be. What do you think of the Dalek City in it? The redesign for the Dalek City.
I really liked it.
And that whole final end bit on Skaro.
It looks amazing.
Yeah.
It's a really good story, this, because it's almost in three acts.
Yes.
And everything...
That second act... It stays its welcome.
It does.
There is a point where, maybe because you just know it's going to happen, you're like, I want to get Skaro now.
Yeah. Like, I love episode one and all of that stuff going around the very 60s looking cafe and all this sort of stuff.
They removed the Beatles song from it.
They removed the Beatles song, didn't they? Yeah, I mean, I love all that because it's not really a setting that we're used to seeing the Doctor and Jamie
in. That was cool.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the last story, the Faceless Ones, that is set in the prison day, but it's set in an airport.
Yeah.
But this feels very much like, Dodo going to the Inferno Club or something.
I was just about to say, it's the first time you kind of feel like the 60s.
Yeah.
The Earth is actually happening, you know, whatever the style is, whatever the culture is.
Yeah.
Doctor Who's intersecting.
Yeah.
Because it does the same thing in you know, the War Machines. Like, the Doctor goes down into this happening club.
Yeah, and I don't think the Troughton era ever does that again.
No.
Even in The Invasion.
No.
It feels just sort of outside of everything that's going on. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I suppose it's because you're dealing with big corporations.
Yeah.
And so because they're obviously going to be far more excluded from the culture, the nightlife.
Yeah, you go from a big, nice office to somebody's house or unit HQ.
And even then after that, when they're socializing, it's a very British middle or upper class way of sort of doing it. Like, we're going to have wine at the in the Green Death.
All
that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Or let's go down the pub.
Yeah.
It's a very old person's way of relaxing in later years.
And even in The Invasion, what's her name? The nice girl, the photographer. When she's got Zoe around and she's like, oh, we'll play some records. And it's Teddy Bear's Picnic.
And
she's like, oh, didn't you like it? And it's like, no, of course I don't fucking like it. This is what you're playing this for, bloody nursery rhymes. Put some on, put the Beatles on, put bloody Bowie on or something.
I know. I love this story for that. Because it does feel contemporary.
Yeah.
And to follow on immediately from the Faceless Ones is a really cool
touch as
well.
It's a really cool thing, yeah.
It's funny that the first two episodes are like a Bond espionage sort of thing. There's lots of subterfuge, there's lots of people being paid off like radios.
It's like an episode of Minder or something.
It is. Then you get the historical alien interference thing in the middle of the story.
Yeah.
Should we talk about Kemal? Because Kemal is a character that I had forgotten was in the story until watching the animation.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously Kemal is... The character is of its time, isn't it? But, you know, I don't know what nationality.
Egyptian.
He's meant to be Egyptian, and I don't know what nationality.
Sonny Caldinez is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he ain't Egyptian, I don't think.
No.
And, you know, it's a weird thing for Doctor Who at that time, because you've got him, and then the following story, you've got Toberman.
I know.
The next mute black guy. So it is a bit bizarre, but I think it makes more sense in this story than perhaps it does in Tomb of the Cybermen.
I would agree.
Because just of the nature of how we know what rich Victorian people were like.
Exactly.
Why a group of archaeologists...
He's a commodity in the house.
Yeah.
And that's no better than presenting Toberman as the heavy.
Yeah.
But, you know, contextually at least,
makes sense.
It's kind of like...
I can believe Maxtable went to Egypt
on an exhibition and brought him back.
And brought him back.
Right.
Whereas I can't understand why...
Toberman is just...
Yeah, why in the whatever century it is, 22nd century,
yeah.
Eric Klieg is... Oh, yeah... We've picked up this mute black geezer and he's gonna pick stuff up and bosh people around the edge.
I know, it's like, you know, at least contextually,
yeah,
that stereotype of Kemal is sort of like in context, whereas with Toberman it's like, oh, things haven't moved on.
No,
even
very
thousands
strange.
Of years into the future.
Yeah. But I liked his character. I loved his relationship with Victoria. That's very sweet.
I liked his relationship with Jamie a lot, because there was a kind of a moment where they have we're going to both kill each other doing this and it's not worth it.
Yeah.
When Jamie saves him from falling off the roof.
Yeah.
And yeah, and then thankfully there's like a proper bond.
It's all Home Alone that, isn't it?
So Kemal obviously, in terms of stereotypes, is not the best.
No.
You know, use of a person of colour in the programme. You know, the thing that did... slightly grind my gears in the animation is the way that Kemal does the bow to Jamie, and then Jamie kind of swats his hands away and goes, oh, don't you know, don't do that. And it's like,
I felt
a little bit uneasy about the way that he just kind of disrespected
Kemal's
way of showing respect.
I mean, it didn't bother me, but I don't know.
It was the one time I kind of went,
oh, really? Okay.
During the screening. And obviously, as soon as Kemal walks on screen, the entire room go, oh, dear.
No.
Oh, everyone looking a bit sheepish. Yeah. Like, if anyone walks in, don't worry, we think it's racist as well. You know, it was that sort of atmosphere. I think that the final end absolutely lives up to the way they've animated it and the way they put it together. Especially that lovely, the way that they reflect stuff from what we know, what we've seen of the recording, where there's the Dalek going along the valley outside.
Yeah.
And you see that with that top down view where it's eye light.
That's really cool.
Is kind of flaring out in front of it is
like a
awesome. Literally.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Awesome. I think it's probably my favourite animated recon.
Oh, definitely.
That they've ever done.
Definitely. Because I was... My concern, especially with episode 4, I think it is episode 4, where most of the Jamie action happens. My concern was like, oh God, this is going to look really clunky when they animate this.
Mm.
And it didn't.
It didn't.
It worked really well. Like him and Kemal climbing up the ropes and worked really well. I thought the most clunky looking bit of animation in the whole thing was right at the start with Jamie and the Doctor chasing after the van. And
it
looked like they were sort of trudging through treacle a little bit. They were like sort of bouncing. But I mean, animating people running is always a nightmare.
That and Jamie and Kemal... pushing the Dalek into the fireplace.
Yeah.
I thought that looked a little bit...
I mean, whatever. When we were watching that, Jonathan was like, you what? That's all it took to destroy a Dalek?
I know.
But hey,
it's fine.
That's the nature of the beast, isn't it, really?
How many Easter eggs did you notice?
So, the Emperor Dalek, Davros Emperor Dalek, as like one of the towers for Skaro.
Mm-hmm.
The Whittaker family crest.
Yep.
The only other ones that I noticed, because Clayton Hickman put them on
Twitter,
was the Draven and stuff in the alleyway on the posters.
Band posters and stuff, yeah.
Otherwise, I can't think of anything else.
The only other one that I can remember is in the room where Jamie and the Doctor are sort of recuperating through the story when they get boshed on the head or whatever.
Yeah.
On the mantelpiece... behind them, holding up one of the what do you call it, shelves,
yeah, yeah,
are weeping angels.
Yeah, I didn't notice that.
Covering their faces.
Back and watch that.
Yeah, that was the first one.
Yeah.
When everybody started murmuring, I was like, oh yeah, of course there'll be things to kind of look
yeah,
at.
Yeah.
The Wilkie Daleks in it.
The Wilkie Daleks in it.
Everybody
yeah.
was looking forward to seeing that.
That was really cool.
I think this is probably one of the best ever Dalek stories. And I know that everybody says that. It's either between this and
it's
Power.
So good. And one of the things that I really loved, and Jonathan said the same, all the stuff in the house, although it is a bit laboured, the Daleks going through that Victorian setting, that is so incongruous.
I know.
Having this very sci-fi thing in this Victorian setting.
Yeah.
It just works
really well.
You know, and it almost gets a bit creepy and a bit haunted housey.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, that you could really do something with this.
Whenever the Daleks are put in a scenario that is where they're on the back foot.
Yeah.
So whether it's finding the human factor, not having weapons, you know, that is when the Daleks are most interesting.
Yeah.
When all you're seeing is them as tanks coming into spaces and killing people.
Yeah.
They are at their least interesting.
Yeah.
And especially like the way that they've been re-engineered with Chris Chibnall's iteration of the program, where the mutant is, I know we've obviously seen it in like Resurrection.
Yeah.
It's as dangerous as when it's in its casing.
Yeah.
But I just think when it does something where the Daleks are on the back foot and they have to use their initiative, like they you know, everybody's being pulled into slavery to make this Dalek factor,
yeah,
you know, more powerful with the human factor. I think that that's a really nice thing for the Daleks to try and get a hold of. They don't understand it. All they know is we need to beat them.
Yeah.
There must be some, it's very Davros.
Yeah, yeah.
And with the tapes, you know, we need to know why we're being defeated.
Yeah.
If we experiment with the human factor and put it into some Daleks. And then, of course, we have the Civil War thing as well, which is very cool. It's a very important story. So much of the Daleks'
very
history pivots around this central kind of moment.
Yeah, because it was supposed to be their last appearance, wasn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
In the series.
Do you think it would have been a satisfying
way
to wipe them out?
It was really good. Like I
you almost wish they didn't come back.
Yeah,
especially
you were,
if Day was their next story. It's like if we'd skipped straight to Genesis.
Yeah.
That would have been really cool.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I was like, it's a shame that Day of the Daleks happens next, because
it turns them into the piss take
Pepper
Pot, immobile. There's only ever three of them.
Yeah.
You know, and
they sound awful.
Oh, they sound awful.
They
anyway.
Sound like someone doing a bad Dalek impression.
And then coming off the back of
the best, like, Dalek voices.
The best
ever.
Pairing, yeah.
Yeah, it's such a shame. It's like, ah, oh, man, they cocked it up big time.
Mm.
And I like Day of the Daleks as a story.
Yeah.
I think it's a good, you know, Terminator before Terminator story.
Mm.
But no, I agree. I think it would have been a great way to end the Daleks.
Mm.
Obviously, good job they didn't go, but... Yeah, it's just a really good story. And I think watching it back, things about it that I didn't really pick up on watching the recon that I really liked.
Mm.
Molly, the maid.
Yeah.
She would have been such a good companion.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She was like, she's like one of my, could have been companions. She was so good.
She's up there.
Yeah, she's got a great relationship with Jamie.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh. I was like, I don't really want you to go and rescue Victoria. Take her along. She's
Victoria
got
doesn't get the best start.
No.
In terms of her perception.
No.
But then if all the women in Doctor Who are just supposed to be screaming anyway.
Yeah.
Then that's fine.
Yeah.
But that doesn't help her as a character.
No.
She's just a load.
Yeah. Like Molly had a lot more personality.
Exactly.
You know, she was like, oh, don't tell the master. I'm
yeah.
a bit cheeky.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh, I like this.
Yeah. She actually had a character.
She had a character.
The only other thing that I always felt with the story that didn't quite work is I'm not sure Maxtable is the most interesting villain, right? Because he, you know, ends up being the baddie in the end. And the whole thing towards the end when they get to Skaro, where the Daleks finally promise him his alchemy thing. Like, okay... That is a strong thread to make somebody do what, like, I'm going to get the thing that all other scientists have never been able to quite work out. That's really cool. But I just don't feel like the ends justify the means to his character. Like, he is a good man.
Yeah.
And then as soon as they get to Skaro, he becomes a psychotic, evil baddie. And it's like, it was too much of a kind of whiplash effect in his character.
Yeah, they needed to do something. He needed to be like shitty to Kemal or something, didn't they? They needed to set up, or horrible to Molly. They needed to set up that this.
There's a couple of bits where he's horrible to Waterfield.
Yeah.
But it's not quite enough because no. Waterfield is a wet blanket anyway, and he's just desperate. So whatever he says to him, he's going to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So it needed something to just say, oh, yeah, this underneath the Victorian finery and the oh, I'm a nice scientist.
Yeah.
He's a bit of a shithead.
Because you're setting up Waterfield as the main human focus for the story.
Yeah.
Then when Maxtable gets involved, you think, oh, it's another scientist.
Yeah.
They're going to work well with the Doctor. And his sudden heel turn is a bit too much.
Yeah.
You can see it coming, but it's not as gradual as it probably should have been.
Yeah.
When he sees the alchemy machine,
yeah,
that's his ultimate undoing, isn't it? He dies, he gets fried by something.
He gets the Dalek factor.
The Dalek factor, yeah, of course. And it just isn't enough for me. I think his character thread is the only really weak one through it. But beyond that, it's got to be one of the greatest Doctor Who stories of all time. You know?
Yeah, it's definitely up there.
Do you think it's the best Triton?
Do I think it's the best Triton?
It's one or two, isn't it? Surely.
It's definitely up there.
Yeah.
I mean, watching it as the animation, obviously it looked fantastic. And just to think, my God, what must this have been like to watch it at the time? And there's some like really scary bits in it. Something that really stuck with me when I watched the recon, and again with the animation, is the bit where Maxtable kills Kemal.
Yeah.
And it's the kill, 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 kill. And obviously you look at the telesnaps and it's all dark and obviously it's black and white.
Yeah.
And Maxtable looks like he's just jumped out of the cabinet of Dr. Caligari. He's very German expressionist looking. Yeah. Black and white, all that mist. Holy shit, that is terrifying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, oh God, if only we could see that.
I know.
It's such a shame.
I think that they're... Like the lighting in this is
beautiful,
excellent,
and all the dust particles.
It just adds that extra layer.
Yeah,
I really wanted to know how they do Dizzy Daleks because obviously you've got a 2D character interacting with a 3D character. I think it was pulled off perfectly,
really well.
The choice of shots as well, was superb, and a lot of that comes down to the storyboarding, obviously, but naturally the compositing by Rob is just sensational.
There was never a moment really in this story, unlike with Power of the Daleks, where I thought, oh, something should be happening here.
Oh, yeah, because Power
was
the one where you thought, I don't know if these animations are going to quite hit the mark, because there's that constant waiting around for things to happen and characters looking at each other.
And there was none of that. No. I don't know if maybe they trimmed a bit or whatever.
I think that... Well, when they were talking about it afterwards, there was a mention that some stuff was trimmed, but it wasn't like things being cut like macro where people got really upset. But it's like, well, then listen to the audio version of it then, where it makes even less sense.
Yes.
How do you animate the machine thing?
Yeah.
The only other thing I'd say is it's replaced the moon base as my favourite animation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to look at Power of the Daleks, even the way that Pat looks compared to now, you can see, man, they've really nailed it.
Yeah,
they've found
they've refined it so much.
It makes you think, what's it going to look like now when they haven't got Dalek stories to do?
I know,
but that's exciting as well.
Yeah,
you know, what's next? We've got Galaxy 4 next.
Then I think because it was leaked or mentioned in Eagle Moss magazine, Abominable Snowmen or Wheel in Space?
I think Abominable Snowmen is next.
And then Wheel in Space.
Wheel in Space will be after that. Because Wheel in Space, we've been told for ages, like, it's the next one.
Yeah.
And it never is.
No.
It was supposed to be the one after Wheel, after Power, wasn't it?
I think that's what people were saying.
Yeah.
I don't know what the legitimacy of that was. Yeah. I love Abominable Snowmen.
Mm.
I read the Target novelization and I loved the reconstruction. So I am very excited to see what that looks like and, you know, how they do the Yeti and all that sort of stuff. That's really exciting. Wheel in Space is a story that I don't think is generally that well loved. It's like a Cyberman story too many in a very Cyberman heavy era.
Well, it's just the Cybermen doing the same thing as before, but less interestingly.
I think that's it, isn't it? And it's a longer story as well. Yeah.
That's cool.
That's good.
And the one-off cyber design is really cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, it doesn't have much agency to it compared to the others.
Yeah, only that it introduces Zoe.
Yeah.
That's really
what
we get out of that one.
Exactly.
But perhaps that will be a story that will be given a reappraisal when we get to watch it.
Yeah. Because I think there are lots of, in the same way with the moon base, where that there were there were some elements of it that were quite not dark in tone, but like when the Cybermen were offing people in the supplies room was really, really atmospheric and worked really well. And I think that the Cybermen lend themselves really well to animations because you can make them as tall or as broad or as powerful as you want. They have much more agency in those designs when they're drawn.
Yeah.
Because obviously you've got a slightly portly 6'4" bloke walking into a room with the chest unit not quite on.
Yeah.
Or the mouthpiece. You have to get that timing right because otherwise it spoils the illusion. With the Daleks, it doesn't matter quite so much because the rest of their bodies can be animated. But when you're just supposed to be a tall silver bloke and you don't open your mouth right, It kind of cocks it up slightly. So I'm interested to see maybe how they adapt the design for the wheel in Space Cybermen.
Yeah.
You know, obviously there'll be lots of nodding and lots of moving back and forth. But I love that that's the only way that they could be like, so you're the one that's going to say this line. Line two, you speak and just make sure we're nodding back and forth and doing all that so we know who's talking.
It's like they're drunk. It's great. Wobbling back and forth.
Yeah. There we go. I think that's that really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Evil of the Daleks. Go and buy it now. Available DVD, Blu-ray, digital download, I'm sure.
It's really just like, my God, they've set the benchmark with this.
Mm. It must be nice to have two different companies working on them one after the other because it's almost like, right, beat this sort of thing. So there is a nice bit of creative.
And obviously they do it all very much their own. They each have their own style.
Yes,
you know,
these
ones are... Obviously, they're in colour, but they try to be as close to what we saw on TV as possible, maybe with a few embellishments here and there. Whereas Fury from the Deep was like, yeah, we know what it looks like, but we're going to go big with it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
We're going to make sure that the drill room is huge and all that. And that works.
Because I'd say that my second or third favourite animation is probably
Fury from the Deep.
Fury from the Deep. Mm. I really like that one. So yeah, it's what an exciting time to be a Doctor Who fan.
It's mad. Like my brother,
Series 13 on the horizon.
Russell's coming back, and we're nearly halfway through all of the missing episodes in animation.
It's nuts. And the collection set's still coming out. You might even know what the next one is by the time this comes out. It might have been released.
But yeah, it's bonkers. Like my brother was like, you know, we grew up thinking we would never see this stuff.
I know.
You know, and now we can just put it on and watch it. It's fabulous.
It's so
absolutely
cool.
Absolutely incredible. God, we're so bloody lucky.
I know.
We are so lucky. You know, people moan about Doctor Who, like, not getting enough attention or whatever. We are probably the luckiest fandom
out there. Yeah, I'd say so.
And I mean that as someone who likes a bit of Star Wars and likes a bit of this and a bit of that. I think we are bloody treated like royalty, really.
I think we are.
We get such good stuff.
Mm. I mean, even the action figures.
Even the toys,
The action figures alone. We were saying the other night, remember when there was a time where you thought, okay, they'll put a head on this and we can get an Ainley figure or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's the limit. That's as far as they can go. And then within a 3-year period, you get a Harry Sullivan. And then,
all
the Romanas and the Raston Warrior robot and all that kind of stuff coming out.
Sensorites. They are such good figures. Sensorites are beautiful. I think they're one of my favorite figures in the line, actually.
Really?
Yeah, they're so good. I was playing with them the other night.
I'm 29. There we go. I really wish that Doctor Who fans would just...
I think
realize
they just need
how good
to
we really
stop and just take
it.
A step back.
Yeah,
and I think, but it's the, I don't want to be an old man here.
Yeah,
I don't want to be an old man because actually I think it's a bit funny because I think some of the old men in the fandom have a good old moan.
Yeah,
and obviously some of the younger people have a good old moan, and I'm going to be a bit of an old man now and be like, you know, you young nippersnappers with your bloody
whippersnappers,
you young kids, you know, you grew up with your bloody Russell T Davies and your bloody toys in Toys R Us.
I was just about to say.
And, you know, when we were kids,
I know,
we had none of that.
I know.
We had a grotty corner in Forbidden Planet with the BBV videos.
That everybody was ashamed to look at.
Yeah, and some crummy old Dapol figures.
Yep.
And we bloody loved it.
And we bloody loved it. Maybe we... are just more, I don't want to say grateful because that sounds iffy, but I'm like, maybe it's just that because we didn't have anything for a long time that when we get it now, it's just like, well, everything's great.
Yeah.
You know, why wouldn't everything be great? But then for the fans that are used to trailers, photographs, things being leaked, blah, blah, blah. I think when it gets too far into the leak territory, when you think you know the show more than any other fan does, or you expect more from the show than most fans do.
Yeah.
That's when it gets a bit like, all right, you know, nothing's owed to you.
No.
We are getting these stories animated. That alone should be enough that you don't have to constantly be at the BBC's back saying, where's the trailer for Series 13? It's like, well, chill out. Enjoy Even the Daleks in the meantime. It's fine.
Yeah, this is it, isn't it? And I think we should probably add a little disclaimer here that, you know, we are both guilty of saying, oh, there should have been a trailer.
100%. Or they should have done, I'm not saying that we've not said things about that in the past.
We all do it. We're not trying to be holier than thou about this. But, yeah, I just think when you know, if we didn't have stuff like the collection sets, if we didn't have stuff like these animations or the figures, or, you know, and obviously not everyone collects the figures and not everyone collects the animations.
Well, yeah, exactly.
You know, vice versa. You know, obviously there's stuff like the comic books that come out. I don't read the comic books. I've no interest in the comic books. Not really.
You've got new Doctor Who every week with Big Finish.
We've got pretty much. Yeah, by God, Big Finish.
Christopher Eccleston's back. David Tennant is the Doctor.
It is bonkers. And I think, you know, if you were, like, say, a Star Wars fan, okay, you get a pretty constant run of toys throughout the year.
You get, but yeah, but I think that's slightly different, though, because just with the context of a TV series, you know, okay, it might happen once every 2 years or something with the current run, but you're going to get, you know, 6 to 10 weeks of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
I suppose it's the same as being a Bond fan. That you
if,
get,
yeah, my God, if you're a Bond fan.
One movie every 6 years or something.
And I think the Bond, there are there are distinctive splits of fandom, which are like, I am a Bond fan because I like the films.
Yeah.
And then you might have a Bond fan who likes all of Bond and all the books and all that sort of
and
stuff.
And all the video games.
And all the video games. Yeah. You know? So they might be like, oh, that's all right. There's a new novel coming out.
Yeah.
So I'm sated.
Well, I said this the other day. It's become the Bond podcast because we will talk about No Time to Die when we've both seen it. I've seen it once. I'm seeing it again tomorrow.
Oh, are you?
Yeah. But with mum and dad. They it's like, come on, we've got to see a Bond movie. It's Daniel Craig's last one. We've got to go. I think that the model of the Bond things where you'd have a movie every 2 years and a video game to fill the gap is great. I don't know why that isn't sustainable for them. You probably make cheaper movies and you'd make your money back quicker doing that model, maybe once every 4 years or something, just so we knew we have a guaranteed run of things. I think that the stability that TV brings, where it's always the news is always going to be on at 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
Call the Midwife is always going to be on after Strictly, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
When you start to reel that back because you have to be realistic, because there's a budget issue, there's a scheduling issue, people don't realize that making a TV show can be as complex as making a film.
Yeah.
There's a reason beyond COVID that No Time to Die was delayed twice before the COVID thing happened with the Danny Boyle thing.
Yeah.
You know, with it within being announced within the first 2 or 3 months, then they said, right, another 6 months because Cary Fukunaga's coming on. So when Doctor Who, which should be on the telly every day, 6:30, you know, but that's the way that people view television.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And especially people who grew up with it back in the 60s when it was literally on like every fucking week.
Yeah.
You know,
or our generation, people our age, where Russell was their first introduction to the show. Like,
so Doctor Who has to be 13 episodes.
13 episodes every year and a Christmas special.
Then there's something wrong and the BBC, what are they doing?
I know. But it's so rare that a TV show will last that long in that time slot or whatever.
Like,
how many times Corrie changed before they found the current way of doing things? Holby or Casualty, one of the two, one's being cancelled.
Holby's going,
the other one's been scaled back from productions before. I don't know, but like... These things happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the interim, we're being given animated reconstructions. Yeah. I'm not saying you should always just be grateful and you should never complain about it.
No, no, no.
But I just think that people lose perspective of, as a fandom, sure, people might be yelling at each other on the internet every now and again. That happens all the time. It's the internet. What do you expect?
Yeah.
But to act like we not having a trailer means that this fandom or this product is bad or is dying or whatever, it really isn't. You know, you go to one of the BFI events and see how many people are in that room loving and laughing at Doctor Who, and immediately once you leave you go, right, talk about what we just saw anyway, Series 13. That conversation is still happening, just because it's taken how many weeks out from the show going out to get inklings that Series 13 is happening in October or November or whatever. It's fine. Just, you know, everybody watch Evil of the Daleks. If you're bored and you've got nothing to do while you wait for the next trailer to drop, watch Evil of the Daleks.
Or dip into Big Finish or...
whatever. There's so much stuff.
Pick up a novelization.
Exactly. You know, Doctor Who... But we know it's the channels or the, you know, websites or whatever that rely on a constant stream of information. They're the ones that are complaining.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that's your problem for thinking that you could sustain that conversation for a year when there's no Doctor Who on TV.
Yeah.
We all thought that all the NMDs on their live streams would get bored of the show and walk away from it as soon as you have a year where there's no Doctor Who on television.
Yeah.
Or when Russell comes back and you think it's all sweetness and light. Everything's going to be just like it was back in the old days. It's like, no, people are still going to find things to complain about.
Of course.
And that's part of the community. And that's sometimes why we love it, because there's always a conversation going on.
Yeah.
But I think chilling out and watching Eve of the Daleks is probably in everybody's best interests at the moment. And that's probably where we should leave today's podcast.
Well, thank you very much for listening or watching. We'll see you again next time. Ooh, what are we doing next time?
Next time, we're doing our first ever 11th Doctor review. We're going to do doing a yin and yang sort of thing.
Yeah.
So we're going to do the Rings of Akaten as the sort of worst on the list for the 2014 DWM poll.
Yeah.
Then we're going to do, as the counterpoint to that, Vincent and the Doctor.
Yeah.
Just because the other episode that was above that, so the two that were above it was obviously the 50th anniversary at number one, which will review separately as a thing.
Yeah, it doesn't really... it's his own thing. It doesn't really feel like it's part of that run.
It was in cinemas. Yeah. It's a movie. It kind of deserves... It's the 50th anniversary.
Yeah.
When we review that, we'll obviously...
got three Doctors in it.
Exactly.
It doesn't really help.
And then the 11th Hour, obviously an introductory Doctor story. Not the best example of the show in general during their tenure. So the way we've engineered it, so you get the Rings of Akaten and Vincent and the Doctor.
Yeah, and interesting that it's from Matt Smith's first series and his
last series. So to compare and contrast the way that energy changes or whatever is going to be really interesting. Mm. Yeah. So tune in to enjoy that when it comes out. And until then, support the Patreon, because on Friday this week, this episode's coming out, you're going to get your commentary for Zygon when being you just isn't enough.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to get that. But if you want to be on the Patreon and get that stuff ahead of time, then support it.
Thank you very much.
There we go.
Bye-bye.
Bye.